Welcome to the Prickly Couch podcast, where three mujeres have real conversations. We'll share our stories and talk about wellness, familias, work, and everything in between in our experiences as Latina women. Welcome, everybody, to another podcast episode of the Prickly Couch. We have our amazing colleague and friend, Jasmine Mavrakis. She's a registered dietitian here in Austin, Texas. And Jasmine, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be back on the Prickly Couch. Such a cute name. My name is Jasmine Mavrakis. I'm a registered and licensed dietitian. There you go, Gabby, both in Texas. And I have a virtual private practice that supports folks with disordered eating disorders, and chronic disease management through intuitive eating and health at every size principles.
Hey, we're happy to have you here, Jasmine.
Jasmine, can you also tell us a little bit about who you are as a human?
Yes, I love this question. I love that question. You know, like, depending on the city that you live in or the country, right? Like, this is so different. I feel like different regions of the U.S. even, like, sometimes people don't care at all what you do for work, or don't, like, just like, who are you? What do you enjoy? It's your life. Who am I as a human? I really like to travel. That's something that I enjoy. I really enjoy being outside, spending time in nature, hiking, seeing different parts of the world. Lately, I just started picking up a new hobby of swimming, which is super fun. I really enjoy just being around people. I'm pretty extroverted, and so I enjoy hanging out. I don't have any pets, any kids. I don't have anything I'm responsible for except for myself. So that's that makes it easy. Yeah. So I get to just read some books and hang out on my hammock. And enjoying the awesome, I know I keep talking about being outside, but just like being on Town Lake on a Saturday morning in Austin, Texas, and then, you know, going to lay out by the pool and read a book is probably where you'll find me.
I love that for you. I really do.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that with us. So today's topic is going to be on eating disorders, body image, and social media. And we're culturally specific practice at Prickly Pear. We also focus on the Latina community. So I do want to ask, do eating disorders affect Latinas? And if so, how?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's a lot of statistics that show, it's hard, right? Because it's really limited in folks studying specifically, you know, Latinas, and also studying eating disorders. And so this intersection is like really not studied. And when it is, we might be still having our own biases and either underreporting from the client side, or underdiagnosing from the researcher side or clinician side. So, but I think there is, you know, some stats out there to show, if not at least as often as prevalent as white folks. I know certain eating disorders, like bulimia, for example, I think have an even higher prevalence compared to their white counterparts.
Mm-hmm. And there might be subgroups of the Latino community that, you know, the eating disorders look a little bit different, or they might be more prevalent. But, and I think that is, I like that question, because I think one of the assumptions is that, for a long time, one of the assumptions was that eating disorders didn't affect Black and brown communities. And so it wasn't until fairly recent that there's been studies looking at prevalence, right? And how do symptoms look, and what are some of the reasons why we don't have those numbers captured? And so it's, I think very recently we're starting to understand more and have conversations more in the community about what that looks like for us.
Isn't that wild? Like, why was it believed that like only white people could get eating disorders? Only white women? How weird.
That is a weird thing, but I think that's how we function here.
Mm-hmm.
It is, yeah, limited. Let's call it that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you both for talking about that. I think that's important. Just recognizing that we might not have a lot of information or education around eating disorders in BIPOC communities, because all of this is only being recently looked at and acknowledged. And I think that's like an important context when we're having conversations about eating disorders. And also when we're talking about eating disorders, there's also this word body image, and it's usually connected. And sometimes even used like kind of interchangeably a little bit. So what does that mean? What does body image mean? Like, what is that? What is those two words? What are those two words?
Yeah, so I guess I would describe it as, you know, eating disorders can sometimes, not always, result from, in part, body dissatisfaction. Dissatisfaction with how one's body appears or how their body is perceived to themselves, right? So their own inner perception of their body and how it's showing up in the world. And I think even that names out a misconception that all eating disorders are body image related. Often there are, right? And often eating disorders morph in interesting ways, but also there are eating disorders that might not have that component, right? For example, ARFID is an eating disorder that we're hearing more about and seeing more often, and that's one that may or may not have that component. But Gabby, I would love to hear your definition of body image.
I think that as a trauma therapist, right, and as a culturally grounded trauma therapist, body image in my experience and practice and understanding is really the connection that we have to our bodies. And by that I mean, do we feel safe in the body that we're in? Above and beyond, if we feel comfortable in the body that we're in. Because I think comfort can mean different things for different people, but to me it goes to the idea of safety, because a lot of folks might feel not necessarily good. They're reinforced about the way that they look, or they are very conventionally, right, reinforced for looking in this way, and still show high levels of dissatisfaction and high levels of discomfort within their own body. And part of it is, we were talking right before this, was it's embodiment. Can I be in my body presently and feel safe? And when we're thinking about Black and brown bodies, Indigenous bodies, right, it's not safe. It's not safe to be a person of color in this country because of the many isms, because of the collective trauma, systemic racism in the systems that we live in. It's difficult, right, to feel safe in a world that isn't safe for everybody. And again, when we're talking about isms, right, there's intersectionality, and we know that in the community there's a lot of diversity, and so there might be different ranges of safety and what that means within our communities, but I think it's important to consider too what it means to live in a body that is Black, brown, or Indigenous, or non-white.
Yeah, that's body image meaning safety, and putting that into perspective of eating disorders, right? Because I've seen conversations about you have an eating disorder because you have like a body image dissatisfaction. You just don't like it, right? Or you don't like how it looks. But thinking about it as safety, it adds a whole different weight to it. And putting into perspective for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, like, it's not just dissatisfaction, like personal dissatisfaction. It's others, the way others are looking at your body and the way that others treat your body. So that is a whole, adds a whole nother weight to it. And now we have, there's a lot of social medias out there. There's a lot of different kinds of things. There's an app, there's a new Threads app that I have not even touched yet, but we have TikTok and that took off in the pandemic. And I've heard a lot of discourse about eating disorders and TikTok and all that that's happening, right? But before that, we have Instagram and we have Facebook and all that stuff. So what is this connection between social media and eating disorders? Because it seems to change with the app too. Like it changes, either it helps it in some way, it helps the movement in some way, but it also doesn't, and it exacerbates the effect of it. So I'm just curious on your both of y'all's thoughts around that.
Desmond and I will share a lot of TikToks. I usually will get some fucking outrageous takes on my For You page that I will send and be like, oh my god.
I'm like, don't send these to me because I don't want my feed getting messed up. I'm
just kidding. Yes, we get to see some
wild, to know. Some I'm like, water talk, like all my clients are talking about it. And the only reason I know about it is because, you know, I had to delete TikTok. And so thankfully, the Prickly Pear Mujeres in our group text keep me in the loop. Thankfully, Gabby sends me what's
I'm on
going
it.
Down.
I'm on
this
it.
Is market research. What is going on these pages? My clients will tell me the wildest things, and they're like, you need to go report this, like, let's all go report these wild accounts. They're out here advocating for these accounts to be removed.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't remember the question now that you're asking.
You were talking about like how social media impact in disorders, or like how they connected. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, like, when that research started, I think I was in grad school, and we started to think about like, what is the impact of social media in mental health? Like, it didn't start then, I'm not that old, but you know, there was like a peak of how much we were using it. And the research was very clear that the more that we spend time in social media, the poor outcomes that we get, right? The poorer outcomes we get. So because we're constantly engaging in this comparison of what other people have, how other people live, how other people look, and us. And the thing that we know about social media is that we're all out there showing our reels, right? Like the best moments of our lives, the pieces that we want to show. But we actually do change our identities a little bit in order to show up in social media. And there's a ton of research around that that I could go into a whole soapbox about that. But in relationship to body image and eating disorders, we know that the social media can serve as a very strong reinforcer of behavior, eating disorder behaviors, disorder eating, skew really the way that we evaluate our bodies and that I'm trying to think like the, not comparison, but the understanding, I guess, we have of our body and what it looks like, what it's supposed to look like, the expectations that we have about all that. But I think in going along with that, I can imagine, and I don't know if there's studies out there, I'm imagining that there will be. I think there's different social media accounts or platforms, I think, impact those things differently, right? Because with Instagram, you have, I mean, for a long time, you only had photos and you had one photo, and recently you can add multiple photos and now you can add reels. So it was like a really a snapshot of somebody's look or somebody's outfit of the day or somebody's life, a trip, whatever. On TikTok, you get 30 seconds to 3 minutes of content of, you know, more of like the lifestyle in this more, yeah, in this more practical or like live way. But also the misinformation on TikTok is wild. And so there's like, I think, another layer in wellness culture there for sure.
Yeah. And I think referencing back water talk, I saw it after I saw it in the, after Gabby let me know that this is a thing. I was very, I was interested. I'm like, what is,
it was so weird.
What is this drama about? I'm always searching for drama. That is not mine, to be clear. And I was looking at it and I saw that. So this, a water talk came out of a specific community, you know, this was a niche community of people who had gone through this, the surgery, and with their doctor came up with the plan to get them more hydrated. At least this was like a subset of these people, right? But then people who, it was on the internet, on everywhere to see, took it as an opportunity to feed off diet culture and then use that for something else. And so I've noticed that in TikTok or just social media in general, there's like these, like you said, misinformation, like wellness misinformation, stuff that is for one specific person with the help of a professional. And that gets spread and it causes like, just feeds off diet culture. It's just like this monster that is just diet culture and people are wrong with it. It's just interesting how to see that play out and then have people. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think it's cool though. I'm like thinking back to like, what did we have 10 years ago, 20 years ago, right? Like the MySpace, and I don't know if you'll remember Tumblr and like, you know, people on Pinterest and all of that. I feel like back then there was a lot of like, there's been shifts in folks sharing amongst like people in their communities. Like it was like people that you knew in real life, maybe, it, for example, with MySpace or Facebook or early Instagram. And the shift has been into maybe like influencer, like influencers didn't exist before, right? Like it was your MySpace top five or whatever. And so it's interesting because on one hand we get that culture that's shifted, but it almost has like served as a way of like, before when we would maybe see people we know presenting in a different way that was not the full truth, right? Or just the highlight reel. I think now that we have like this understanding that there are influencers, like most folks know, okay, people are getting paid. This is their full-time job, is to have a picture perfect life on their page, right? They're selling me something, right? Yet it can be so subconscious, right? The impacts of it. That even if we're on these apps thinking like, okay, I know that this is harmful for me. I know this is going to impact my mental health. I know this is going to be, you know, addictive, so on and so forth, that I don't know if this is how everybody feels, but I feel like it's this idea of like, but it's not going to impact me that way, right? Or it's like, well, other people might be, you know, comparing their bodies or the body image things, right? But I think it's really sneaky how it shows up, probably on a really, you know, not fully conscious level of our brains being exposed to these images, these videos, especially of people that we don't actually know in real life, right? Or in person. That's like really interesting to me. And then I was gonna say too about the water talk. Well, I guess not about that, but another thought I had was like, also back in MySpace times or what have you, we didn't have a lot of like healthcare professionals on Instagram, on TikTok, right? Or on these, on social media. And so now it feels like you can't really get away with, I mean, you can obviously spread misinformation, but there will always be, at least what I see, a dietitian, a doctor, a food scientist, a therapist. Like if that misinformation goes viral, obviously that's really harmful, and you're going to get called out, right? There's going to be another side of TikTok, more chisme, more drama, of like someone, you know, what's it called when you
get canceled?
Oh yeah, but when you like make the video your response,
or you stitch, yeah, it.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that I guess kind of gives me hope, because it feels like there's this other side of social media that is, you know, maybe there's the side of social media that is focusing on anti-racism or anti-diet culture or anti these like oppressive systems, and there's folks on the platforms now that have a voice that maybe otherwise wouldn't be on there to be able to, you know, so it doesn't completely offset the misinformation, but maybe helps compared to MySpace. But I don't remember any misinformation going on in MySpace. It was just like glitter.
And yeah, like, I feel like it was different. Social media was very different. And now I like that positive take, Jasmine, because I think I'm on the other side of it. Like, I feel hopeless that I don't know that the people that are receiving that misinformation will get that other side if they're not critical about it, because the algorithms and the way that it works, they might not even see it. Or might be really invested in keeping that truth, right? That we don't know. So I shared a video with you, Jasmine, not that long ago, of this woman that was presenting on TikTok that alcohol was actually really good for depression.
Oh my God, it got taken down before I could even see it.
Yeah, she went on this whole rant that it helped gut health and therefore it was good for depression. So you should drink to clear your gastrointestinal system. And we said it.
And I think, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that I think there's room for both, like you said, a little bit of fear in what's happening in social media and a little bit of hope, because also the way that social media works is algorithm based, right? So if we are following a lot of professionals like clinicians, dietitians, who are finding doctors, like I follow a lot of skincare people to like demyth some of the things so they don't make me buy something that I don't need, all of that. So that I get to see that, but we're thinking about who's on TikTok. It's young people. And do they know who to look for? Who's credible? Do they have those critical thinking skills that we have yet? And that might not be developed yet. So I think there's a little bit of both. Like, there's a little fear of who's seeing those videos that we are a little suspicious about or concerned about. And also, like, we know that some people are going to get to see that debunked video that the professionals and other people who maybe have had an experience or something like that are sharing. So.
I was gonna say, hopefully with social media and the stitching that you were mentioning, Jasmine, you can people can be exposed to like those other sides, right, of TikTok, or that other side, because there's also very accessible information now for people, and that I think it's like the superpower of TikTok. Is that there's a lot of information that might be really helpful. What were you going to say?
I forgot. Oh, it was going to be just like, I think with TikTok, it's so different from Instagram that there's so many sides of TikTok that like my experience on TikTok is so different than like if I see my partner's, you know, account. And I'm like, wow, your feed is even like Instagram Reels. It feels like most people, if I'm like looking at the videos they're looking at, it's kind of all the same vibe. There's not this like, these sides where I'm like, wow, that's not at all like, I feel like TikTok is such a healthy place because that's what my algorithm has created. But like, I'm like, it's like this place where we all go and like take care of ourselves. It's like a self-care, but it's like, no, that's just my TikTok. Like, other people have like extreme stunts all over there, so animal videos or skincare. So it's a helpful reminder that, you know, we have the power though to change our algorithm in a way, right? With how we choose to engage in it, what we thumbs up or thumbs down or, you know, interact with. And I want to continue interacting with the Chismes. I can see more.
And I think that's a really good point. And we're bringing it back, like, recovery, right, of eating disorders, mm-hmm. and body image, having conversations with our clients about recovery and behaviors to sustain recovery, right? It is, how do you curate your Instagram or your TikTok to engage with those things that are going to be powerful and important for your recovery? Because the negative impact that social media is going to have on your mood is almost automatic. Like, you can see it on that same day. And so we want to be having those conversations and, like, suggesting accounts of people that are solid, right? Because we know our clients are going to be consuming that.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And I know there's so many cool resources out now, documentaries, books, right, that even showcase that in a more jarring way. That's been really eye-opening. So, as usual, I'm optimistically hopeful.
I love it, though. I think that's helpful, too, to hold that space. All right. So, Jasmine, is there anything else that you'd like to share about the relationship?
Yeah. Speaking of finding helpful information on social media, I found this post that I wanted to, maybe we can link it also in the show notes. But I just threw the link at Gabby right before we started recording. But I wonder, Gabby, if you might be able to just share with the audience this idea of body image work maybe being described in a different way, more as embodiment work, and what that means and how that's maybe a better way to describe this type of work.
So embodiment is a little bit of what I was mentioning before, right? Is that we are able to be in our bodies in a safe way. And, you know, part of what the post, I wanted to pull it up, the post that you shared, Justin, says, you know, the term body image can be ironic because we're culturally conditioned to view our bodies as images or objects, right, that create the society of dissatisfaction. And so when we're able to sense our bodies, understand what is happening within us, right, internally, and what is happening around us, if we're thinking about around us as the context that we were talking at the very beginning, then we are able to integrate being able to be in our bodies, right, safely, while also living in a world where there's going to be judgments, or there's going to be ideas about what the body that we live in is. And so it is really intense and deep work to be able to connect with our bodies in that way. I think that in my mind, it's very connected to not body acceptance or body love, but really about body respect and body kindness, right? So what is it that, despite of this isms, right, despite of all this, what is it that my body needs to feel safe? What is it that my body, what I need to get my needs met, not only in the nutrition aspect, but the emotional aspect? What is it that is nourishing in all these aspects to bring in, so then I can be present and understand what my experience is fully, and understand that I'm worth of that care and nourishment, inside and outside of my body. Mm-hmm. So it's integrating, right, like your sense of self with the body you live in.
Thank you, Gabby. I think that's such a perspective shift, right? It can be a big sense of relief for folks that feel like they have to love their bodies, to, when we're talking about body image, but rather, you know, just changing the framework to body neutrality, body respect, can be a lot more attainable and feel a lot more accessible for folks.
Yeah, and I think more real, right? Because mm-hmm. we don't are always going to love the body we live in for many reasons. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we didn't talk about today, but it's like sometimes for those of us that our bodies do not do what they're supposed to be doing, what we expect them to do, it's going to be really hard to connect with that idea of body love, unconditional body love. But I can have respect for my body and I can be kind to my body to rest and to know that I still deserve nourishment, that I still deserve to do things that are fulfilling. And that aspect, right, is not the only one that is going to get to dictate how I engage with my life. Mm-hmm. I can feel that I don't like totally love my body today and I still am going to eat regularly. I still might do movement that feels good. I still need to rest and do all those things necessary to live this life.
Claps, 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 Gabby. Claps yeah. and snaps.
Thank you, thank you.
Thanks, Gabby.
Yeah, well, we'll pause there. Jasmine, again, it was such a pleasure to have you in this space again. Always really happy to connect in these ways and continue to present our topics on this different intersections. So we will see you in the next episode and look out in our description for Jasmine's information, how to connect with her, more about her practice, and any and all the resources that we labeled today. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye, Jasmine. Take care.